Hello, today is Thursday, September 16th. I'm Doria Fleischer, Community Engagement Coordinator for Charles County. We're currently experiencing another surge of cases here, and with students returning to school and many more to the workplace, it's more important than ever to take the measures to slow the spread of the virus. Charles County Commissioners reinstated a mask mandate at all public indoor locations, effective August 13th, and recently renewed it to ensure public safety and health. We're here today to answer the latest questions on all the news related to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's an honor to be joined by Dr. Diana E. Abney, Health Officer for Charles County, and Mr. William Grimes, Vice President at Charles Regional Medical Center. They will be sharing their latest updates. Dr. Abney and Mr. Grimes, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Let's get started by talking about the current status of COVID-19 cases here in Charles County. Dr. Abney, what are the most important trends that we need to know about?
So what we need to know about is the fact that our cases are still rising, which is not a happy trend, let's say. Yesterday, we were at 27.9. Today, we're at 32.2. Yesterday, the state was at 19.78, and it is at 20.8. So we're not going in the right direction, and neither is the state. So that's a sad trend, something we need to try to get a hold on. The other thing that is very concerning is that in the last 24 hours, we had 69 new cases. More concerning is that nearly half of those were in people under the age of 18.
Thank you. And Mr. Grimes, what is the status of COVID-19 hospitalizations, and are there any trends that are important for our community to know about that?
Well, I think the most important thing is that the number of cases we're seeing is going up, not just here in the county, but across the University of Maryland system, as well as in other hospitals in the state. We're a 100-bed hospital. Today, we have 16 patients in-house, so not quite 20%, but getting there. We have been at 20%. This go-around has been more difficult in many ways. Firstly, because we've been fighting this now for a long time, but also we are seeing much younger patients in general. In the first go-around, and I go back to last year, March, April, May, many of our patients were in their 70s and 80s, a lot of them coming out of nursing homes or other long-term facilities. This time, we're seeing people who are coming from their homes, and they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So it's a much younger group, predominantly, this go-around. I think everyone has heard lots about what's going on nationally about numbers and the impact on staffing, hospital staffing for nurses and other vital clinicians, such as respiratory therapists. So this time it's difficult. It's difficult in a different way.
Thank you. Dr. Abney, can you update us on the status of our vaccinations? What have we accomplished as a county so far? Why is it so important to be fully vaccinated? And can you talk about some of the misperceptions that are still hanging around about the vaccine?
Certainly. The first thing I'm going to tell you, if we look at all eligible people, that's 12 years and older, we're at 61.6% vaccinated. The state is at 73.5%. So Charles County still has a ways to go as far as it is concerned with being vaccinated. And I'm going to go in reverse chronological order. Our 65 plus population is 86.3% vaccinated. 18 plus is 62.4%. And our youth, 12 to 17, are actually doing better than they were early on. They're at 54.3%. So they're catching up. But even with our youth, we still have a ways to go. Once you're fully vaccinated, you are much less likely to get COVID-19 illness. And once you're fully vaccinated, even if you do get the illness, you are significantly less likely to have to visit with Mr. Grimes and the people at the hospital. You are much less likely to become an ICU patient, and you are significantly less likely to die from COVID. So being fully vaccinated, wearing your mask, watching your distance, and keeping your hands clean is the way that you can make a difference in getting COVID-19 for yourself and spreading it to your friends, families, and neighbors. Let's talk a little bit about those misconceptions. For some reason, people still believe that the vaccine is experimental. It is not. This vaccine is, at least for Pfizer, fully approved for 16 years and older. And for the other two, and for Pfizer, for 12 to 15 years of age, is under EUA, emergency use authorization. So it is not experimental. It will not affect your fertility. It will not cause you to be magnetized. Spoons and things will not stick to your arm where you were vaccinated. It does not change your DNA. Does not cause you to have a change in any of the things that people are worried about. Basically, what it does is it provides immunity to the COVID-19 virus. It is safe for pregnant and breastfeeding mothers. And in fact, we have been seeing that pregnant women have been giving at least temporary immunity to their newborn infants. As far as pregnant women are concerned, when you're pregnant, if you get COVID-19, you are much more likely to have a bad outcome with your pregnancy. You're much more likely to be hospitalized. You're much more likely to have a preterm birth. You're much more likely, if you're pregnant and you're infected with COVID-19, to have a stillbirth. And you're much more likely to get preeclampsia, which is a complication of pregnancy that can cause high blood pressure, prematurity, and can lead to preeclampsia, which can cause much more complications for the mother, including seizures, and can eventually even lead to death for the mother. So these are reasons that you really, if you're pregnant, want to think about getting the COVID vaccine. But as with anything with pregnancy, you should talk with your doctor and make a decision based on what you and your obstetrician decide you should do.
If I can build on something Dr. Abney said, when you look at our patients that we've seen, hospitalized patients that we've seen, the vast majority are unvaccinated. We have seen a couple of vaccinated patients. However, the difference is those vaccinated patients are predominantly here for something else. They also happen to have COVID. The unvaccinated patients, they're here because of COVID. COVID is the reason they're hospitalized versus most of our vaccinated patients. And the vaccinated patients that we are seeing who've been hospitalized go back to that much older age group of 70s and 80-year-olds versus the unvaccinated 30s, 40s, and 50-year-olds that we're seeing. I think that's an important piece of the puzzle, or part of the picture, I should say.
So, Mr. Grimes, what are some of the current treatment recommendations for COVID-19? What should a resident do if they think that they might have COVID?
The first thing to do, if you have any question, is get tested. There are a number of different testing facilities here in the county. Certainly, if you're suffering significant symptoms, having trouble breathing, come to the hospital. But, you know, the urgent care centers can provide testing as well and help you determine the best course of treatment. You have a number of really good options. Google and Facebook are not necessarily one of those good options. And certainly not anything involving that's used for deworming horses. So please talk to a healthcare provider, either at, you know, your personal provider, the emergency department. The Department of Health has some great resources, urgent care centers, but get tested. I think that's the most important thing, so you really know what you're facing. There are a number of different things that have the same symptoms as COVID initially. Shortness of breath, temperature, things of that nature. So we need to find out what we're dealing with first, and then seek the appropriate help.
Thank you. And I know we're hearing about important developments with people who've been infected with COVID-19. They're at risk for complications, but the monoclonal antibodies are a good treatment option. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, monoclonal antibodies are, I don't want to say a wonder drug, but they're a very focused antibody to help your body's own antibodies fight off COVID. They're used in a number of other for a number of other illnesses and conditions. And in this case, these monoclonal antibodies, it takes about 2 hours to get them from start to finish. It's a simple infusion. They're focused on people who already have been diagnosed with COVID, but have not yet developed significant symptoms. And that's a really important piece of it. They need to be taken early in the disease process. Your physician can help you get the order for those. It does require an order from a physician, and your physician will have access to the CRISP website, which is the Chesapeake Regional Information System. It's a fantastic health information system out there for getting people scheduled for these types of things and other stuff as well. But you would come into the hospital. We would infuse you with this bag of monoclonal antibodies. And so far, we have not seen a single one of our, I think we're at 115 patients right now. We have not seen a single one of our patients who receive monoclonal antibodies come back and be hospitalized. So it has worked out very well. They're being given at hospitals and other health facilities around the state. It's at no cost to the patient. But it's a very efficient and effective drug. You need to talk to your provider. If you come to the emergency department, we may refer you from the emergency department to get the infusion.
So to clarify, if I was somebody who lived in Charles County and thought that I had COVID-19, this is something that if I went to the hospital might be available to me?
Well, what you need to do first is work with a provider. Now, that provider can be in the emergency department or your personal provider, personal physician. And once you're diagnosed with COVID, they would then assess your condition. And there are some criteria. And the one thing that we're really looking at is your O2 saturation, your oxygen saturation of your blood. If it's below a certain level, they have found monoclonal antibodies are not the answer. Hospitalization is. And that has been, I'd like to go back and address that in a second, but finishing that piece is that if they determine you're a candidate for the monoclonal antibodies, then they will give you a referral and help you schedule that appointment. We're moving people through quickly because the faster we can get this infused, you know, early in the disease process, the better off you're going to be. I did want to talk about the oxygen saturation. I'm not a doctor, but I've got Dr. Abney to correct me if I go wrong. One of the things that we have noticed, patients get very sick, is their O2 saturation. You're normally in your 90s, and we're seeing people all the way down to their 60s. That's how much oxygen your blood is carrying, how much oxygen your blood is providing to your body, including your brain. And the lung damage caused by COVID reduces that saturation level. And we're watching that carefully because that's often tells us whether or not you're going to get hospitalized or not. Did I do okay there, Dr. Abney?
You did. Let me just add a little bit to this. So basically, once you get diagnosed, Mr. Grimes was exactly correct when he said that it does make a very big difference in whether or not you get better or have to be hospitalized. So we like you to be started on it in less than 10 days or less from your diagnosis. So if you get diagnosed, you should talk to your physician or as soon as possible. And with them, you'll work together with them to decide if you are a candidate for monoclonal antibodies. And indeed, some people get ill very quickly. And if you get ill very quick, very fast, you may be too late to get monoclonal antibodies. That's why you should speak with your doctor very soon after you're diagnosed. It's especially for people who are at high risk for getting sick very quickly. People with comorbidities, with underlying conditions, it can make them more likely to be hospitalized or more likely to be a candidate for going to the ICU. Those people should be started on, if they're going to be a candidate for monoclonal antibodies, they should be started on them very quickly. But anybody who is diagnosed and starts to get sick very fast should very quickly speak to their doctor, because it's key to start them as soon as possible. And as Mr. Grimes said, you don't want to wait so long that you are so sick that it wouldn't work for you. So he's exactly right. You need to talk to them early, and you need to be started on it before it's too late to be started on monoclonal antibodies. And if you'd like to know some of those high-risk conditions, people who already have lung damage, people who have COPD, severe asthma, people who have diabetes that's out of control, things like that, things that you've heard about before that make you at high risk for being very sick with COVID-19.
Dr. Abney, let's wrap up today by talking about the risks associated with students returning to school. I know that's a hot topic that's on a lot of people's minds. What do parents need to do to ensure their children's safety? And how are you working with schools to manage all of the risks of COVID-19?
So in order to make sure that their children are as safe as possible in school, if they're of the age that can be vaccinated, please vaccinate your children. Please vaccinate your children. That is one of the safest things that you can do. For your children who are too young to be vaccinated yet, make sure that the people around them are vaccinated and make sure that they're wearing their masks when they go to school and when they're in other public places so that they can be protected from COVID-19. Follow the directions of the health department, the CDC, and the school as far as making sure your children know what to do at school and what not to do. It is indeed safe for children to wear masks, and they will not be hurt by wearing their masks. So teach them or let them practice at home. For the little ones, you can practice small amounts of time and then work up to wearing them for longer amounts of time. And then just teach them as much as possible to follow the rules at school, which is something we all have been doing with our children all along, even before there was COVID-19. What can I tell you about what we're doing with the schools as far as working with the risks? So the schools and the health department, as well as Maryland Department of Health and Maryland State Department of Education, are all keeping in touch. We're watching what's going on in the school and in the state to make sure that we're keeping an eye on the number of cases and making decisions about whether or not to shut schools down. We're keeping an eye on what's going on around us. Read that as in other counties, because no county is an island unto itself. And in this part of the state, people move freely back and forth. So everybody is watching what's going on. And Mr. Stoddard and Dr. Navarro and I and my team are in constant conversation. So we're keeping an eye. And if we need to make any major changes, we will. But for right now, we're sticking with what we're doing at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Abney. And I want to thank Dr. Abney, the health officer for Charles County, and Mr. William Grimes, the vice president at Charles Regional Medical Center, for being here with us today. That is the news for today. We are urging our community to stay informed with facts from credible sources, directly from the CDC and the Maryland Department of Health. If you haven't been vaccinated yet, please visit covidvax.maryland.gov or call 1-855-MD-COVID. Go Vax for assistance. The health department is continuing its clinics, and you can pre-register locally to obtain an appointment by visiting charlescountycovid.org or calling 301-609-6717 for assistance. You can visit our website, www.charlescountymd.gov. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter, subscribe to the county's e-news, sign up for our text and email alerts through the Citizen Notification System, and watch CCG TV on Comcast Channel 95 or Verizon Channel 10. You can subscribe to our podcast, Charles County Government Unscripted, or to our YouTube channel. We want to remind you, as always, to wear your mask, watch your distance, and wash your hands. Thank you so much for being here today. We continue to make progress in slowing the spread, and we want to keep it that way. Thanks for listening. Take care. Be safe.